Hi, I'm Siobhan Fletcher, one of the journalists up at Manx Radio. Welcome to this instalment of our newscast. Households across the island this week have received leaflets tackling a very controversial topic, assisted dying. The group behind them are arguing against potential legislation currently being spearheaded by Ramsay MHK Dr. Alex Allenson. With a consultation open to the Manx public until the end of the month, I spoke to those on both sides of the argument. The leaflets have been distributed by a group called Manx Duty of Care, with an email address which seems to be of an official capacity. So who are the people behind it and why did they distribute the information? First of all, I sat down with two members from the group.
I'm Dr. Ben Harris. I'm a palliative care specialist.
My name is Neil Umapathy, ENT consultant at Nobles.
We're a group of healthcare workers on the Isle of Man who are worried what would happen to our society if assisted dying is legalised here. We're particularly worried about developments in Canada, and we wanted to share the real facts and evidence about assisted dying, because no one else seems to be doing that so far. I think assisted dying is a superficially attractive proposition, but it's fraught with ethical, moral, and particularly practical issues. And, you know, those don't seem to have been aired so far. We all love choices, don't we? It seems marvellous to have choices. There are two sides to it. We can't choose everything in life. So the best analogy is, you know, if you go out and drive your car, you have to follow the speed limit. You might choose to drive at 100 miles an hour down the prom, but clearly that would jeopardise the safety of other road users and pedestrians. And it's a little bit the same with the assisted dying legislation, that one person's choice is putting an awful lot of other people potentially at risk. The other aspect of choice is when does a choice become an obligation? And just making the legislation available, there's almost a bit of pressure on people, almost a duty to go for it, especially when we know that what people fear most is becoming a burden on their family and friends. And so they may feel obliged to ask for assisted dying, really as part of that, rather than a genuine positive choice. I think those in favour of euthanasia or assisted dying, quite often they justify that by claiming that it's inevitable that people will have unbearable suffering. But in my experience, not only is suffering a very subjective phenomenon, but it certainly isn't inevitable. And, you know, with correct treatments and care provision, the time leading up to death can actually be a very rewarding time, and often a time of reconciliation for families. It isn't people who are dying who are asking for this legislation to change. It seems to be being driven more by politics and ideology, rather than actual, you know, concern for people at the end of life and how it would actually affect them.
When people talk about autonomy, freedom, my life, my death, it's superficially attractive. But when you put in a real life situation where there is a terminal illness diagnosed, where there is a serious condition, you know, discussed with prognosis, it's not easy. Everybody is vulnerable. And in those situations, the first thing that comes to our mind is fear. So when you are fearful of future, it's not true autonomy we're talking about. We're not in real pain or real agony. It's a suspected pain and agony. It's fear of the future, terminal trouble. And that's what pushes people to make choice, or I would rather die. But if the options are given, how those conditions may be managed better, whether it is pain or any other issues and conditions they come up with, if the management options are better, then they will know the real choice and the future isn't fearful. So that the assurance we need to be giving in those vulnerable moments. I think I respect people who choose to die. You know, it's my life, it's my death. So that choice is respectable. And I can also see the arguments really strongly in favor of assisted dying, because the autonomy is almost a human instinctive. It's my choice. But the real thing is, it is not about choice. It is not about your right. What is important is it good, is it safe to be a law? So that is what you're talking about. It's not about personal choice. It is, if this becomes a law, will this be safe for not only the person who is competent, who is terminally ill, who wants to end his life or her life, but also people who are vulnerable? Would they be, you know, putting in a difficult situation by family, friends, or themselves, you know, subconsciously, subtly, without any obvious visible pressure? So they'll be feeling, I have to take this route. But nobody will know how many people will really be dead in 2 months' time if they didn't take that choice. You know, we are hearing so many stories about prognosis being wrong. You know, nobody can predict you will live only 6 months. Even with best care in the world, you can't predict that. That is a difficult thing. So when you give 6 months' time to live, we always get it wrong. And every doctor, if you speak to them, they will say how they got it wrong. And I've seen so many patients coming and quoting, oh, I've been to this specialist, he told I've got 6 months to live. Now I'm 5 years down the line, I'm walking like a lion. So it is not uncommon. It's in fact rather common to predict wrongly how long you got to live. As I said before, it is so important to understand it is not the real terminal illness which is actually making people to choose this thing. It is the fear of what will happen to me if I have this terminal diagnosis. That's what pushing me to choose death.
The Isle of Man has an exceptionally caring society, it seems to me. That was evident through COVID, where people in need were looked after by their families, friends, and neighbours. We also have a very extensive health and social care service and a wide variety of charities, including the hospice, that provides care for people at end of life. So really there is really no need for assisted dying on the Isle of Man. And indeed, over many years of practice, it's not a request that's been put to me. Because people do feel cared for, and they're content with that. Those in favour of euthanasia or assisted dying, quite often they justify that by claiming that it's inevitable that people will have unbearable suffering. But in my experience, not only is suffering a very subjective phenomenon, but it certainly isn't inevitable. With correct treatments and care provision, the time leading up to death can actually be a very rewarding time, and often a time of reconciliation for families. It isn't people who are dying who are asking for this legislation to change. It seems to be being driven more by politics and ideology rather than actual, you know, concern for people at the end of life and how it would actually affect them.
I want to talk about the Oregon experience, which seems to be coming up more often. So Oregon is a smaller state, about half a population of London. It became a law in 1997, and every year the people dying due to assisted dying is going by 300%, 400% more than it was before that. Now, there are some safeguards. I'll pick a couple of things. One is two doctors' opinion. You need to have two independent doctor's opinion who knows you well enough to say you are, you know, the right candidate for assisted dying. But the reality is that the average time doctors knew the patient was about 12 weeks. And the doctors, you know, if the patient don't find the right doctor for second opinion, they keep looking until they find somebody. So if that the patients want to do that, they will somehow manage to do that. The second is that there was a terminal diagnosis made, cancer in the low bowel, rectal cancer, and the doctor gave 6 months time. But, the second doctor somehow persuaded the patient to have the treatment. The issue was, the treatment will give me hair loss. That was the fear, and she didn't want the treatment. But in the end, she decided to go ahead with the treatment. And 5 years later, this patient and her family meets the doctor in a social event and say, "You have saved my life, and I am seeing my children graduating and their wedding, and I am a grandmother now." So this is someone who got 6 months. These are all real life stories. I'm sure the stories will be on both sides. People who want pro, they are for assisted dying, they will have some stories and real stories. Someone, if I given a choice, if I had a quadriplegia, paralyzed neck down, I probably will say, "I don't want to live." But if it really happens, then the information is not about just about your prognosis and your condition. It's also about what is available to me at that time, how I can manage, is it possible, and what hope I have in life. There is always meaning in life to see the next day, to see the next week. And that's all about life, isn't it? What is there for us to enjoy? What is there for us to share with others? And that memories, I think that's what we need to give. Hope is more important in these scenarios when you are vulnerable, not death. It's cheap choice, cheap free choice, or I'll die. But what is hard is to give the right choice, which is to deal with the issues in the right way and support them in the right way.
I hope that your listeners would listen to the comments today, also read the leaflet that's been put through their doors, and use that when they complete the consultation. We're a democracy, and it's important that citizens of the Isle of Man, make their views known.
What about the other side of this debate? Former Russian MHK Quinton Gill tried unsuccessfully to bring forward a private members' bill, which sought to introduce the concept and, if approved, the practice of assisted dying here on the island. He says he welcomes the legislation Dr. Alex Allenson is now spearheading. I caught up with him about the development since his own legislation.
My interest is historic. As a former MHK, I co-sponsored the leave to introduce a bill for assisted dying, and that was accepted in principle, but ran out of support and tumult at that time. I think my take on the current Timwald is it's a much more liberal, and we've seen that with the abortion debate and the outcome of that, which I entirely welcome. And again, I entirely applaud Dr. Allenson for leading that. And I think he's entirely the right member to lead the assisted dying debate and hopefully legislation. So from my historical interest, which I still maintain as a personal matter entirely at the moment, I wish him well. I think the debate has already started to take an unfortunate turn in certain circumstances. I got home recently and found an unsolicited leaflet, which my first instinct was, this looks very much like a government. There is a Timwald consultation about the pros and cons of the merits of leave to introduce, and this looked very much like a government leaflet that we get on a regular basis about all manner of things. Only it wasn't, and I wonder if there's some coincidence in the group who don't advertise who they actually are in person, but they've got their view. They're a bit alarmist in my view, but they have their opposing view on principle primarily, and certain spurious arguments about safeguards being disregarded and abuses happening in perfectly mature legal democratic states around the world who are ahead of us and have allowed this social legislation. I think I would reflect on the legislation that I was promoting. Timwald at that time basically had three groups. A small group of us were making a considered and informed choice to promote the legislation. A similarly small group were making the opposing view, primarily on faith grounds, which is fine, and I totally respect that, but they were quite open about that. There was a bit of alarmism as well that was thrown in about people would feel vulnerable and they would feel that they had would become a burden. I mean, there's no suggestion there's any true evidence for that then or now. But there were those two separate groups. But the biggest group in the middle, which basically was the inertia group, it was, we don't need to do this. We don't need to upset the UK. It's something we can leave to somebody else. And so let's just leave it alone. And that carried the vote. So it was an inertia view rather than anything else. But I think my take for what it's worth of Timwald now, and certainly based on the experience of the abortion debate and all the very unfortunate and alarmist threats that we saw around that, was that Timwald overrode those. They didn't get drawn into it. They did the right thing, in my opinion, and they've carried it forward. And I think that those same numbers, those same bodies now are much more socially liberal, much more inclusive, and much more open to our autonomy actually being put into practice through legislation. And we'll see if that assessment is correct or not. What I would like to avoid in the process of that is getting drawn back into the alarmist and unfounded arguments that we were finding thrown up against us, and the threats indeed that were thrown up, not only in the legislation that I was promoting, but in the abortion debate as well.
I know you've mentioned the abortion debate a few times there, and I think that's ultimately a lot of the arguments to do with assisted dying weirdly come up to the similar idea of that it's all about personal choice and allowing for that. When I sat down with a couple of the members of this group yesterday, their opinion tended to be that choosing death, really, a dignified death in a way, wasn't really a choice. People should choose hope and choose life. But do you think ultimately having that choice full stop is pretty essential for our society? It's something that we should, encourage.
I don't know the basis of their argument. It doesn't sound rational. It doesn't sound compelling. It doesn't convince me. What I believe myself is that actually if we introduce this legislation with safeguards, with caveats, with checks and balances, with opt-in and opt-out conditions for practitioners, and of course most importantly for people who are competent to make their own personal decision, that actually both sides can have their own way. If I wish to have a timeliest death that I choose in my mental capacity, at the time and the place of my choosing, that's a matter for me. My life, my body belongs to me and not to the state, not to a church, not to anybody else. I don't have a greater responsibility than to myself and to others around me. In terms of the opposition, who would say, well, you should embrace life and choice. Yes, you should. You can still do that. But ultimately, it's a matter of personal choice. If you choose to have a lingering, painful, unnecessarily agonising and distressing death, then you're very welcome to choose that. But please don't impose your views, your values on me if I choose to have a different outcome.
So ultimately, having this legislation in place gives people an option, really. Like you said, you don't believe that it being in place would mean that people would feel the need to have to go for it. It's just an option out there for those who do want it on the table.
Yes, and I've not followed the research since my time in the House of Keys, but that was certainly an argument that was thrown up and was roundly dismissed because the evidence in other jurisdictions cited here that safeguards are disregarded. I don't recall any of that being the case. And if people choose to make a decision that you feel is unwise, it's still their right to make that decision. And if they're making it in a considered, competent manner, then we should respect that. The BMA, as I understand it, are neutral about this, not in the Isle of Man, but in the UK. It is a socially acceptable debate for legitimate, mature debate. And palliative care is not the be-all answer for everybody all the time, and it's a misleading statement to say it. None of these advances have happened by mistake. None of these advances happened without the establishment, be it a religious establishment, a political establishment, but the closed shop of we know best, we will control you, we will make your decisions for you. They've never happened without a struggle, and this is another struggle, and it should be a struggle that the Isle of Man should be proud to be leading. And it should be like, again, I do come back to the abortion because it was so contentious, and now it's basically, it's a done job. All the big threats that were out there have come to nothing, and I hope they continue to do so. But we still have to guard against people who will control other people's lives for their own motivation and their own motives. An example of what I've just described is, I recall when we were promoting this legislation initially, the claim was made by hospice that people didn't die in distress. That was the phrase. I recall it clearly. Clearly a nonsensical and unsustainable claim, because there is distress, physical distress, pain, distress, psychological, emotional, all sorts of distress. And to claim that people do not die in distress is clearly nonsense. And no advances in palliative care have taken away from that truth. And so I think we need to just deal with matters as they are, not as we're told they are by self-interested groups and self-interested individuals. And if we have an honest debate, and a debate which respects alternative views and respects people's choices, I think there is only one mature outcome from this, and that is that we get leave to introduce, and that legislation, as we've seen elsewhere in previous occasions, can be founded that it meets a Manx need and it respects Manx differences of opinion.
Now, understandably, this is a controversial topic and it's divided opinion across the island. On today's Man in Line programme, hosted by Beth Espy, we had people with a lot of different opinions ring up. Here are a few of them.
Assisted dying. Obviously a very contentious subject, but something that a lot of people haven't, or I haven't heard anyone make mention of so far, is it with in relation to somebody who's got a living will or an instruction to their family, for example. My mum was a nurse for 30 plus years. She always made it clear to us that she wanted a do not resuscitate kind of order. Obviously, she's professionally trained. She knew exactly what she was talking about. She had a stroke, was paralysed from the neck down, and basically after 2-3 weeks in hospital, they put her into a nursing home because there was no hope of her recovering. While she was in the nursing home, she had to be kept in an induced state of extreme medication because she was screaming for people to help her put an end to her life because she was basically incapable of doing anything. But because she didn't have any breathing apparatus or anything connected to her, we couldn't carry out her wishes of a do not resuscitate. You know, if she's on a machine, you know, who couldn't feed herself and all that kind of stuff, you would essentially say, okay, there's no hope of her recovering. We need to decide what we're going to do. She was in that state for 7 years. She had 3 further strokes and 2 heart attacks while she was paralyzed from the neck down. As I say, she was kept in a continual state of, a continual medicated state. She couldn't do anything for herself. And she, effectively, she went from about 9 stone down to 4 stone because she couldn't move, she couldn't exercise, she couldn't do anything for herself. So I'm not saying, you know, if your pet was in that condition, it would have been inhumane to keep your pet alive. For some reason, we think that somebody who is medically trained and has expressed an instruction to say, if I'm ever on a machine, do not resuscitate. Yes, she was extremely vulnerable in the position she was in. She was paralyzed. But before that happened, many, many years before, she said, if ever I'm in that, you know, if ever a machine's keeping me alive, you know, DNR, they call it. And so please don't think just because somebody is, something bad's happened to them. Yes, they are vulnerable, but please don't think they're not in a condition where they can make a rational judgment for themselves. My mum already did so, but we couldn't carry out her wishes because she wasn't on the machine. So instead, she deteriorated for 7 years. She kept getting her medical boosters, her flu jabs, all this, that and the other, but there was, you know, the doctors who kept looking at her said there's no hope of her improving. It sounds very cold and callous for me to say that, but when you see a parent, a child, a loved one in that condition, slowly, slowly slipping away, the body just eating itself, effectively deteriorating, it's heartbreaking. We certainly didn't come to any, you know, this wasn't something a mental state we created to say we wish she wasn't in that condition because we wanted her money or she was a burden on us or anything. No, she absolutely wasn't. But she was, you know, in a condition of, when she wasn't medicated, of extreme distress all the time and was causing distress to the other residents. So they kept her medicated.
Mark, that just sounds...
That's all I wanted to say.
It just sounds truly awful what your mum and you, your family, have had to go through with that. What difference do you think it would have made to you and your family if these sort of laws maybe had been in place?
We wouldn't have had to see... Our last memory of our mum wouldn't have been... And I hate to come across as brutal, but essentially... somebody who had wasted away. You know, it was, if you think you can't move for 7 years, you can't eat, you can't swallow, you're just effectively on a drip and occasionally you're given soup or something for 7 years. You can imagine the deterioration in the body. Yes, you can, the people at the nursing home, they did their best. They would make sure they moved her around to make sure she didn't get bed sores, etc. But, you know, you can imagine how the impact it would have. Our remaining memories weren't of a happy, joyous, healthy person. They were somebody who had effectively wasted away. And it sounds, it's been years since, it's been 5-6 years now since she passed. But I know myself and my sisters, we were extremely, extremely angry at the whole situation. And we did say, you know, if anything happens, she does have this DNR wish. She has expressed to us. When she had heart attacks and strokes at the nursing home, they had to do what they could to stabilise her. But because there was no, the nursing home people, because she wasn't in hospital, they had to call, an ambulance for people to come and attend to her. But because there was no machinery helping her to breathe, everything was done to try and save her life, which everybody wants their loved ones to be kept alive. But after wasting away and deteriorating for years, not just a couple of weeks, not just a couple of months, but for 7 years, it was heartbreaking. The medical people attended to her, they said it's a heartbreaking situation. But, you know, as everyone knows about the doctor's Hippocratic Oath, etc. If she couldn't feed herself, so if they stopped, you know, if they stopped feeding her, yes, she would have gone. She would have slipped away. But, you know, feeding someone isn't a do not resuscitate instruction. It's, you know, it's them doing what they needed to do. So I'm not saying, you know... everyone should be given the option necessarily. But what I'm saying is, if somebody has got that, you know, a clear instruction to their family that they don't want to be kept, for example, I think they call it persistent vegetative state. If somebody doesn't want to be kept in that position, allow them to have, you know, respect their decision that they made at a time in their life when they were obviously considered sane enough to, for example, create a will. You are in a position of medical mental awareness that you can create a will. And, you know, that's a legally binding document. Yes, people can contend it or what have you. But if somebody has that instruction in there that, you know, they want to be in a position where they can choose when they want to go, please, you know, respect that decision. And I understand people, it's a contentious issue. People have strong feelings one way or the other. But you can't necessarily discriminate one person's decision and choice about their own selves against somebody else's.
Let's go to some of the text messages now. Assisted dying. There is a clear call for change with places such as Jersey adapting their laws to suit the needs of the elderly and the poorly. We need assisted death. These clinics are easy to set up and will provide work and trade. This idea would attract trade from the end-of-life care patients around the UK and make us a hub for well-trained palliative care doctors from around the world. No one wants to linger in pain and be a financial drain. We could save millions for more worthy causes and the NHS. People want this choice and it's cruel not to consider their feelings. That's from TG. Ed says doctors can't know how a person in terrible pain feels unless they have experienced it themselves. Jeff says, I'd like to raise 2 points relating to assisted dying. Is this not a form of suicide, and would that not affect their life policies? And if we can't carry out the death penalty for convicted murders, do we have the right to carry out assisted dying without the outside authorities intervening? Just a thought there from Jeff. Thank you very much indeed. I have very strong feelings, says this texter, on this, as I've recently been diagnosed with MS. It is a degenerative condition, and I don't want my children to have to watch me unable to feed myself or have any cognitive function. It's the most hideous thing to watch a loved one struggle like this, and I will be going to Switzerland before I get to that state unless we get some kind of change to the current law. Nick is on line two. How are you doing, Nick?
Okay, now about the assisted dying, or I can't remember the other term for it. I'm all for that. And as Mark said, well, it's absolutely tragic that he had to, his mom had to deal with, had to stay alive for 7 years. And I think it's crazy that we don't consider doing that for pets or anything like that. We think it's inhumane and cruel. So why don't we think the same thing for our loved ones? But my worry is that I spent 40, 50 years of my life working hard to get a life savings or put something away. If I have a stroke and then I'm incapable of taking myself to the toilet or feeding myself or bathing, I don't want to pay someone else to do that for me when I'm not even enjoying the life that I'm living. And I don't want to pay what I've heard is like £1,000 a week or something to a nursing home. It's absolutely crazy. I don't pay that in my rent. I don't pay that for my mortgage. And I would much, much rather have that go to my children or any surviving member of my family. I mean, it's not the government's money to choose where it goes, and it's not the nursing homes, you know? I have to think about that.
Okay, Nick.
It is a financial thing as well. Before I go, there was a lady about a couple of months ago who mentioned that her father was in the nursing home, and it ate away all his life savings. You know, and people are saying they have to sell their home if they can't afford the care. That's another thing. I mean, that's an asset. If I'm going to be wasting away, I couldn't bear to have that happen. I just think, you know, I'd rather, if I had the capability, I would, you know, walk into the sea with a backpack full of bricks. I just don't want to ever have that my family go through it, and I don't want the burden of the financial burden upon them.
So which side of the debate do you come down on? If you want to get your opinion heard, the public consultation on assisted dying is open until the 26th of January.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Little Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.